The Guardian. This edition of Chips with Everything is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace offers a unique domain experience that's fully transparent and simple to set up. And there's also award-winning 24/7 customer support. See for yourself. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code CHIPS to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
If your mattress is more than 8 years old, then its best days are probably behind it. But shopping for a new mattress is such a pain, right? Well, Lisa's here to change all that. No more showrooms, no more commission-driven salesmen, no more delivery people with muddy boots lugging it up your stairs. The Lisa is a luxury mattress with three unique foam layers to help you stay cool and comfortable and wake up totally refreshed. You can try your new Lisa for 100 nights completely risk-free, and if you don't love your new mattress, Lisa will pick it up and arrange for a full refund. Check out the range for yourself at lisa.co.uk/guardian and get £80 off your new mattress by entering the offer code GUARDIAN80 at the checkout. That's lesa.co.uk/guardian. The Lisa mattress, a better place to sleep.
What can we do with data gathered from naked mole rats? Could we gain a new lens on nature, society, maybe even ourselves? This is Lee Alexander, and our guest today on Chips with Everything is Julie Freeman. She's the Data Artworks Curator for Open Data Institute's Data is Culture program. That's a lot of data. She's doing a computer science PhD at Queen Mary University, and she's also an artist who creates forms, animations, soundscapes, and things like that from tracking data. If you listen to our show regularly, you might remember our episode back in February on how tracking tech and data are helping us with animal conservation. Julie thinks about where we can go from there.
I work a lot with data, which is kind of, it's integral to all my work, but it's almost secondary in the sense that I'm interested in how sort of technological interfaces give us a new perception on nature, which is living things, animals, the environment, and so on. So I'm interested in making work that explores how technology mediates our understanding of nature in different ways. And I'm particularly interested in the way that real-time data is a big part of that.
For example, she did a piece called The Lake, which tracked fish in their native environment and then created a sort of abstract animation and soundscape from their movements in real time. The fish, perhaps unbeknownst to themselves, were playing their own music.
And that piece of work was probably my first sort of major work with this kind of data, and it really made me realise how impactful it is that when you've got something that is alive creating work, it gives it a special sort of unpredictability and something really exciting, because even as the artist, I've created a system, but I still don't know what's going to happen next because I've relinquished control and I've let the fish kind of take over. And so since then, I've really been interested in working in a similar vein with different animals or environmental data from sensors and so on.
Julie Freeman's work with naked mole rats lives at rat.systems, where RAT stands for rodent activity transmission, of course. One day, Julie, who does taxidermy as a hobby, was at Queen Mary looking for a freeze dryer, as you do, when she struck up a conversation with someone called Chris Folks, who also had a freezer full of small mammals.
So we bonded, and then I found out he was a naked mole rat keeper. He's one of the world experts, actually, on naked mole rats. And so we devised a plan that I would use my technical knowledge to set up a tracking system to track the mole rats in real time and give us a data feed that would A, allow me to make artworks and also allow me to make visualizations in collaboration with him, depending on what sort of scientific needs he might want to understand. And also to give him a set of never before collected data so he could begin to understand the naked mole rats, how they behave in their community, what their roles are, in a way that had never been done before.
When we come back, we'll talk with artist, computer scientist, and hobbyist taxidermist Julie Freeman about the surprising things she did with the data gathered from these naked mole rat colonies.
Create a beautiful website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade, ever. Try it for yourself. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code CHIPS to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
I'd like to take a moment to recommend another great Guardian podcast, our friends at Science Weekly. The award-winning Science Weekly is the best place to discover the latest debates in biology, chemistry, physics, and sometimes even math. Recent episodes have explored the new discovery of exoplanets orbiting TRAPPIST-1 and the search for life there, the perils of teaching morality to robots, and the psychology and ethics of persuasion. With our Guardian journalists and experts from around the world, you're in for a treat. To find out more, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts or find us on your favorite podcasting app. Welcome back to Chips with Everything. I'm your host, Lee Alexander. If you've never seen a naked mole rat before, I suggest you Google images it or something just now before continuing. They are really strange creatures. They're kind of long and firm, sheathed in this luminous pink skin, totally hairless. But don't let their unusual appearance put you off. These are apparently very collaborative and special animals.
So naked mole rats are a really unusual creature. They're a eusocial mammal, and eusocial means that they act in a kind of way like insects, so like bees or ants, where they have a queen that dominates the colony, and then the others all have roles within the community that act sort of altruistically. Some of them will have roles where they look after the young, the others will be foragers, some will be soldiers looking after the nest. So they have this really kind of quite lovely way of living where they all pitch in together, and there's just one breeding female and then a couple of breeding males. So the community aspect of them is really interesting to me, especially for a mammal. And it made me wonder what it would be like if humans were like that, actually. But the other things about naked mole rats is that they are resistant to cancer. So obviously, in terms of biological sciences, it's really interesting for us to study their genetic makeup so that we can maybe cure cancer. They're also have an incredible longevity, so they last 10 times longer than another mammal of their size. Up to 40 years, I think, and they're only maybe 10 centimetres long, so it's an incredibly long time for something that small to live. And they have really sort of elastic skin. They can also run backwards as fast as they can run forwards, and I love that.
So they originate in different parts of Africa, and there are a lot of different kinds, but living under deserts, some of them have had to build these massive tunnel systems, and they really look out for one another in these hot, dry climates where food is sparse.
So one of the things that I found really fascinating, the mole rats have got four front teeth that they use for digging, and they sit outside of their lips. They look like teeth, but they're also a bit like tusks, really. But one of the things I found really interesting is that they can move them like chopsticks. They can move them independently. You know, they're incredibly cute little animals with these incredibly uncute front teeth. But the teeth are actually the thing that's really interesting about them.
A female naked mole rat can suppress fertility in her community by physically running over the top of all the other animals in the community. So not only do they resist cancer, but they have really convenient access to birth control, too. Thinking about what we could learn from these animals, Julie created an installation at Somerset House for its program based on the Utopia of Thomas More.
Somerset House had a set of three kinetic sculptures which were driven by live naked mole rat data. So one was the queen data, and then the other two were moving in response to the males or the females, aggregated data. There was also an animation called A Selfless Society. And the animation is an abstract animation that visualises in a very kind of soft, fluid way, the way that the animals are moving around the nest. And it's not a visualisation that is a direct, oh look, you can learn something from it. It's more like an essence of the data, so you can get a sense of life but without a lot of information being conveyed. And it also has a soundscape so you can listen to the movement of the animals in the nest. We also showed a visualisation so you could see directly where the animals were at any one time.
The kinetic sculptures, which you can see a little bit about at rat.systems, are these really interesting silicon forms, kind of tall and smooth and moving slowly in space, a little bit creepy, just like the animals themselves. But one really interesting thing also is that Julie wanted to provoke people to think, even in a slightly lighthearted way, about our respect for our animal subjects. A lot of animal trackers, she says, don't realize that they might be providing poachers or unscrupulous collectors a brightly flashing signpost to actually find and follow these creatures. So when Julie created portraits of each mole rat in her colony, she redacted their eyes to protect each animal's privacy. So what was the goal of this work?
So what we're hoping from the the show at Somerset House was that people would gain an understanding of what these animals were, and also to start thinking about this idea of eusocial behaviour and the cooperativism, altruism, and the things that make a mammalian society work, things that sometimes slip away from us if we're in a very individualistic sort of world. Maybe it would be helpful for us to consider our neighbours and consider putting them first above ourselves. And that was one of the things that I wanted to come across from thinking about the animation, A Selfless Society. I also wanted to explore the idea of data visualisation techniques that are used not to visualise data, but to give a sense of the data. So something more ambient. And what will our world look like in the future when we can't manage all of the data streams that are around us and we don't want to be looking at charts and graphs and figures all the time? Maybe these soft robotic sculptures, these kind of ambient forms that are moving, could have a body language that is informed by data that gives us a sense of what's happening around us without it being very exact. So we're still going to carry on quantifying as much as we can because I think we're slightly addicted to it. But maybe the way that we understand that quantified data can be done in a really soft way. I mean, imagine we all understand each other through body language. There's a huge amount of communication happens in a very short space of time. If an object had the same body language, because it was made of programmable materials that moved in a particular way in response to how its materials were degrading or what was happening in the environment around it, what would that body language of the object be like? Could we learn it? Could we begin to understand that?
So that previous Somerset House exhibition attracted thousands of people of all ages, connecting with both the abstract art they saw as well as the stories of the animals themselves. All of Julie's work with naked mole rats uses real-time data, all driven by the colony's behavior alone.
So one way that we did that was to have a very basic visualization of the animals, which was a symbolic representation of their nest. And each animal just had a dot and a number, and you could see them moving around. And the queen is orange, so you could see where she was. And she's the one that's moving around all the time, like keeping the community in check. And then you could see some of the other ones, that are a bit, some of them a bit more lazy, and some of them are patrolling a particular area. So that animation allowed people to see that the animals were moving right here, right now. And then just by saying that the data, that's the very same data, was used to create artwork and sculptures, it seemed to work quite effectively. So people did understand that the gallery had this sense of life about it, even though the animals weren't there. And that idea of connecting to nature in a way through technology, through using real-time data, is really important to me. And I think it gives the work something special. It does give it this kind of unpredictable quality. I was thinking about why it's important to me, and actually this idea that you can sit and watch the sunset or the sea or a flock of birds or in an aquarium, we can watch these things for such a long time and they're just continuing in loops and patterns, but there's something about them that we don't know what's going to happen next. And what I think I'm trying to do with my work is trying to get that to that same point where you can sit and look, and because you know it's being generated by a living thing, you get a sort of sense that you can sit and watch and contemplate it.
So yeah, this is a really interesting combination of the data driven with the organic, isn't it? By looking at the movements of this colony and by visualizing it through these different expressive works, are we maybe provoked to think a little bit more about equality or the lack thereof in our own societies? Are we invited to become more active participants in the flow of information on our own planet? I hope there's a little bit of naked mole rat inside of all of us. This has been Chips with Everything. You can subscribe to our show and check out other great Guardian podcasts on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. If you like Chips with Everything, please give us a rating on iTunes as it helps people find out about us. And hey, we've been nominated for a British Podcast Award in the Smartest category. I know, thank you so much. It's an honor just to be nominated, but if you want to, you can go to britishpodcastawards.com, check out our fellow nominees, and if you want to, vote for us in the Listener's Choice category as well. That'd be nice of you, but even if you don't, we can still hang out. I'm your host, Leigh Alexander. This episode is produced by Ian Chambers, and we're looking forward to next week. Hope you are too. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.